What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Life Journey Podcast. You're in season three, and this is your host, Quinn Gauze. We have an amazing guest on today, Angel Mills. Angel Mills is a brand impact coach and strategist. Angel helps emerging brand builders form thriving client communities through strategic marketing services, education, and coaching. Angel, welcome on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, glad having you on. So normally on the Life Journey Podcast, we normally speak about the entire journey of how you got to where you are today, from when you were a little tot coming out the womb all the way up to where you are today. And also what you're doing in your business today, that people that are listening that need help, that may want to do what you're doing one day, that may be in high school or younger or older, that want to dive into what you're doing or want to see how they can go in a similar lane. So thanks for being on the show. And one thing I want to talk about, like, as well too, is that me and Angel met via it was a conference, actually. My friend
BYOB
my friend, and they said, like, yeah, contact you. They said to contact you about, you know, talking on the platform. So I was like, oh yeah, it'd be a great opportunity. Ended up speaking about some marketing and kind of went from there. So, you know, Angel's an awesome person, so thanks for being on the show again.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Appreciate you. And the first question is going to be, when you growing up as a kid, what was that like? What was your childhood like?
So I'm from Detroit. And
Detroit.
Yes, I'm from Detroit. So it was cold. It's nice to be down here because it's a bit warmer. I mean, it's winter time right now here. So this is not what I signed up for. But growing up in Detroit was really good. I lived in the same house my whole life. I have two siblings. One is older. She is in her early 40s, so we didn't necessarily grow up together. She was so much older than me, but I had another sister as well, and we grew up together with my mom. My parents are divorced, so I live primarily with my mom. And I just remember growing up, it was a lot of kids on my block, and there was a lot of, like, playing outside and going across the street, going over friends' houses. And when I think about, like, right now, what kids have is, like, they don't have that anymore. Like, you don't see kids playing outside and getting to know their neighbors. And so I could be part of, like, well, we're in the same generation, so we could be part of, like, that last generation that maybe gets that type of experience, because I just remember knowing everybody on my block, feeling very comfortable going over to their homes. They can come over to my home. So it definitely felt like a village around me that was there to support me, watch me, correct me if need be. So definitely had a great childhood, and I loved playing a lot, so got to have a lot of fun.
So you bike ride, like, wait, no.
I did that, yeah.
You did that, okay. So Detroit now, like, I know Detroit's, well, Detroit is a pretty, you know, big area, right?
Yeah.
Because I went down there, and we played in a bowl game against North Carolina, and I got a chance to explore different areas. Now I was downtown and had a little people mover.
Yes.
Right? The people, yeah, the little casino and stuff. We were there.
Beautiful. So where are you at? Fort Field?
Fort Field, yeah. Okay. So that's downtown. Okay, yeah. And then we went a little further out to explore 8 Mile. So I didn't know, like, that's 8 Mile is like hood, and then you got, like, your suburb side.
Yeah, it's a very long, like, I think people think of it like a neighborhood street, but it's like a main street.
Yeah.
It's a main street, yeah. So on one side is Detroit, and on the other side, depending on where you are, it's like the suburbs. Depending on which part of 8 Mile, depends on which suburb.
Right.
So yeah, it's kind of like a maybe more like a road in Detroit that kind of separates, like, the boundaries.
Right.
In the city, yeah.
Okay. Cool. And, like, so your experience from, like, I guess, like, elementary school through high school, like, what was that experience? Like, what was your learning experiences? What did you, any part, taking any sports, like, any clubs at school? Like, what,
Yeah, so I went to the same, so my childhood was, like, very consistent. So I lived in the same house. I went to the same school, kindergarten through eighth grade, and the same school for high school the entire time. So my elementary school was, like, a Catholic school. It's no longer open anymore. It closed shortly after. I think it closed before I graduated high school. It closed. So no longer open anymore, but I wore the uniforms, played uniforms, very strict. That was a big part of my childhood, because there was kind of, like, it created an experience to where there was like school and home, and they were different places. Because at right. school you wore a uniform, there was like a certain way you're supposed to behave. We went to mass. Sister this, sister that. They didn't play, but I think my education at school was really strong. They definitely took education. It helped me too, and I enjoyed learning as a kid too. So it helped my education be really strong. Mm-hmm. And some of the activities I did play volleyball in elementary school. I sucked. I sucked. It was just bad. I was just really bad at it. And I just did it for fun, mm-hmm. right? I just had fun with my friends and we were on the team. Right. We weren't good at it. And then I also did the school newspaper and okay. the morning announcements. And so those were opportunities to kind of have like a journalism
right.
space. I eventually went to study journalism at Howard. So it was kind of a cool experience that kind of introduced me to some of those things
okay.
around writing. And that was a big deal there. I had like an advice column in the little newspaper,
okay.
which was fun. People would send me anonymous questions and I'd give them my opinion. I wonder, I'm sure like somewhere in a box, those little newspaper pamphlets or somewhere with those articles. So that was mm-hmm. something I really enjoyed. And then in high school, that was a major transition because I went to public school.
Okay, so you went
for the first time.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So when I was in elementary school, it was super small. It was like 25 of us. Most of us have been going to school together since we were in the early years, kindergarten, first grade. And so in high school, it was like only a couple of kids I knew before I got there, and most of the kids I didn't know.
Right.
So it was a new experience meeting all new kids. It almost felt like though we were, because I went to a predominantly black high school and I went to a predominantly black elementary school, but the nuns were white and the teachers were white in my elementary school. Whereas in my high school, everyone was black.
Right.
Teachers, administrators. So it was like a culture shock a little bit to me. I remember even being in the cafeteria and they're playing like stuff my parents would listen to, like Luther Vandross and stuff. I'm like, I like this. So yeah, it was a culture shock, but in a good way.
Okay, that's good.
In a good way. So I left sports alone in high school because in high school there's like standards and you actually have to be good at the sports
right.
to do them. So and sports like take up a lot more time in high school.
No, definitely do.
Yeah. So I went the student leadership route in high school.
Okay.
So I was class vice president the whole time. The whole 4 years. So I did a lot of like planning, leadership type things, speaking on behalf of the school at different places in the city,
okay.
which was pretty cool. I also did the announcements there. I was in the yearbook, so that kind of gave me some exposure to some journalism. I did a journalism program
mm-hmm.
while I was there. I shadowed some of our local news anchors,
okay.
which was pretty cool, down at the local station.
Mm-hmm.
Which was pretty cool as well. And that kind of solidified my interest in journalism.
Right.
And so after high school, I decided to go to Howard.
Okay.
And I applied to a bunch of schools, but I just knew I was going to Howard. Like I acted like I was thinking about
where
I was gonna
go. Well, I'll try.
But I knew in my heart, I think I had made the decision like sophomore year. I was like, I'm going to Howard. I don't know. I think some other kids, like most of the kids did go to college and they would come back and they would tell us about their experience. Mm-hmm. And it was always something about Howard that was just, it sounded like a really great place. Right. I was like, that sounds like where I want to go. And so when I was in a junior, they have a program at Howard. We have like city clubs. And
okay.
so they have something called a Michigan club, which state, they could be state or city clubs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So for ours, it's the Michigan club. And they actually would take students from Michigan high schools and bring them to Howard
mm-hmm.
via bus for about 4 or 5 days. And mm-hmm. you stay on campus with the student. You go to classes with them. You stay in the dorms with them. You get to go to the cafeteria, go to parties, all of that kind of stuff. So I did that my junior year. And then I was like, okay, I definitely want to be at Howard. I like it here. Yeah, I was like, I definitely want to be here. And a few other kids ended up going too on that trip for my high school. So
okay.
that kind of solidified it for me. I was like, yes, I love DC. I love Howard. This is where I want to be. And so that's where I went for college.
That's awesome. So what year did you end up entering to go to Howard?
2010.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and like your whole experience, because like what you said, that program where like you're able to go like shadow and stuff
yeah.
like that. Like we had something similar like within sports. Like when you go down to, I went to Rutgers, so they did like mm-hmm. a official junior day or
yeah.
official your official visit.
Mm-hmm.
So like you'll go there and you'll stay the night and then like they'll take you out. some people that were in high school abused it. Like,
there's always those people.
Turn up people, you know, and then they're like, well,
like, you would not do that hanging out with college, you know, people.
Yeah, and, but the experience, they'll really open it up. So, no, that's cool that you got a chance to, like, experience it and understand you want to go there. Because how, like, everybody from Rutgers, because we're only, like, what, 2 or 3 hours away from there. And we would Rutgers University from Howard. Everybody would always like, "Yo, you going down this weekend to Howard? Like, is an event going on?" Or I always remember, like, there was always something going on down there.
Yeah, but I don't know. For some reason, when I was at Howard, when I got older, I would like go up to New York.
Really?
But I never would go to Philly, or like I would never. You know, the closest place for me would be Philly or, you know, Jersey area. Right. Like, I never went. But after Howard, I ended up moving to Philly for a couple years. So I would, you know, I would still go back and forth between DC and New York. But I'm like, why did I never stop in Philly? Like, I don't know why. Philly was just not on my radar when I was in school. But it was a great transition, which I'm probably skipping ahead of my story. But it was a great transition to just be 2 hours away from DC. I had grown comfortable in DC at Howard. So, you know, transitioning to Philly was, for a little bit, was cool too.
That's cool. So, like, yeah, talk about that. Talk about that transition from college now.
Yeah. So college was amazing. Great experiences. Just knew I was going to be a journalist. That was what I thought I was going to do. And kind of when I started doing internships over the summer, I got to do some really cool ones. And one of them was in New York. I did a couple of internships in New York, and I would spend the summers in New York. But one of them was at Good Morning America.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And that was a great experience. But I realized, I was like, ooh, is this is what it is. I don't think it's for me. It was like, I worked like some weird hours. I would be going, I remember I would work on the weekends. So it would be like Saturday morning, 3 a.m. and I'm on the train from Brooklyn to Manhattan, and like people are finishing up their night. So there would be people on the train drunk. Definitely have been on multiple trains where someone had thrown up just from drinking so much that night. And I'm just like, and I'm sitting up there going to get my day started, you know, and they're like going to bed. So I was just like, if it made me feel a little bit of a disconnect from the rhythm of like the world. And I was like, you know, I don't think I really wanted to do, I didn't want to do it. I think also I learned, it was an amazing experience, but I also learned a little bit more about like how news stories are selected.
Right.
And I was like, man, these are not necessarily the types of stories that I feel super passionate about telling. And I kind of recognized just from my other internships experiences as well, it's like, hey, you don't have a lot of control over the types. You can pitch a story, but that doesn't mean it's going to actually get selected or it's actually going to be on the news. And so I was seeking an opportunity where I could have more control over the narrative of things that were told and telling the type of stories that I cared about telling.
Wow. It's funny you say that. That's funny.
You studied journalism too, right?
Same thing. Yeah. Same thing happened. High school, internships at news stations, college. It was ABC Studios, did my internship during the summertime while playing ball. And
were you in New York?
New York City.
What year were you there?
It was 2015 when I did it, that internship.
Okay.
So it was like during the summertime. 13. So did it during summertime. And then, yeah, like once I got out of playing football and stuff, I started seeing, I'm like, you know what, this, I don't know. Like, I just didn't have like a, I loved it, but I didn't have a passion for it as much as I.
Not the traditional route.
Yeah. Like, you had to create your own platform. Like, people were on YouTube doing their own journalism, like talking about sports and stuff. And we're organic. Like, that's more organic because you can say what you want to say.
Right.
And then, like, I think that's how I dove into marketing is because.
Same thing.
Yeah.
That's, you have more control over the stories that you're telling. It's more persuasive.
Right.
It's definitely more persuasive. So you can, if you believe in something, and you can make decisions around what you actually believe in.
Right.
And supporting businesses that you believe in their mission and what it is they're trying to do. So that is what took me there. And I did a combination of like some marketing, advertising internships and actual like journalism internships. So I kind of had both experiences. I was able to say, you know what, I really had more fun at the marketing internship. Like, I actually thought that was more cool. It was a little bit more, I liked, because I had two summers where I spent in New York. There was like the one summer I did the journalism internship, and there was a summer I did the marketing internship. And so I was able to kind of compare my experiences, and I was like, I had a lot more fun when I was doing the marketing internship.
So you threw like more your
focus. I think I like the lifestyle of it better. I like the environment better. I like the work a lot more. It was creative. It was thoughtful. I got to see kind of how people pitch ideas. So it was just like some new things that I had been exposed to with that internship. And I also learned like you can use those skills in a different way.
Exactly.
Just like right now, you're utilizing skills that you learned in your journalism program, but you're not necessarily on a news station, and that's okay. Like these skills can be transferred to a lot of different things.
That's so true.
So that's kind of what that experience taught me. So after Howard, so after Howard, I went ahead and went to Penn for University of Pennsylvania for graduate school.
Okay.
And I studied intercultural communication. So to be honest, part of that was because I was not ready to work. I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was like, let me do some more school.
Okay.
That was the way my mind worked at that time. So I got into grad school and I only applied to one. I only found one school. And I don't think I mentioned this before, but I was on a Gates Millennium Scholarship.
And what's that?
And it's a scholarship I built, funded by Bill and Melinda Gates.
Oh, cool.
Foundation.
Oh, okay.
And so, and the fiscal agent for it, if that's the proper terminology, is the United Negro College Fund. So they have different aspects of that same scholarship that go to different organizations. They have like a Hispanic arm, and then there's like an Asian Pacific Islander, I believe, arm as well. So of course, because I'm black, I went through the and so so I was, they will, at that time, they're not awarding from my understanding right now anymore, but they were rewarding for a very long time. And so that scholarship actually is a full scholarship, and it covers all your expenses for undergrad. And then if you want them to cover some of your expenses for grad school, they would, but you had to study certain areas.
So I
was looking for a program that combined communications and education, because they would cover education, an education degree. So I found a program, and I only found like one. I think I found a second one, but it was at like in Minnesota or something. Like I was like, I'm not going there. And I love Northeast. I love the Northeast so much. So I was like, I know I'm staying over here.
Yeah,
so
nobody's going to that cold.
I was like, Philly, that's, I mean, it's still cold there, but it was cold that I had grown accustomed to.
Yeah.
So applied, was able to go, and that was just about two and a half hours away from DC. So it was a super smooth transition. Didn't have to go far. Literally moved out of my dorm and like drove up to Philly and started my new life in Philly. And so my program is 2 years. It was in Penn GSC, or the University of Pennsylvania Graduate School of Education.
Okay.
And so there I studied intercultural communication. It's in the linguistics department. And so really it's a very fluid, open program that covers a lot of different things. And people are able, it leaves it open for people to go into different avenues with it. But essentially this program is really helping you to study and learn about how people from different language backgrounds, cultural backgrounds, communicate and connect. Essentially, so like I did a thesis, and my thesis was around like nonprofit communications and how people in nonprofits, how nonprofits use language and messaging to encourage the like personal agency of the members of those organizations, and like affirming them, helping them to feel confident and like going out and standing up for what they believe in. So the nonprofit that I studied was called Philly Cam, and they actually are like a nonprofit media organization, and they teach people how to utilize media, how to create their own content. They allow people access to their space because they have like a studio, they have video equipment, equipment like this as well, if folks want to do podcasts. And so people can really create content around the things that they want to create content around. So it was very cool. It was cool to see people in the community having discussions about what they want to have. Very niche media, essentially, is what it is. So seeing people have conversations around topics that were of interest to them that may not be the mainstream conversation. And most of the people look like us too that they were serving. So it was a very cool organization. It still kind of got me in my media bag, and I still got to get my nonprofit communications, my communication studies and stuff going, my marketing going.
Okay.
So it was a cool experience that kind of combined all of those things.
In one,
which was really great. And while I was there, I also took a film, a 1 year film course So I was still getting my journalism and my media stuff while I was there.
Right.
So after that, still wasn't ready to work.
He's like, not yet.
Still not ready. Still didn't know what I wanted to do. I don't think I ever envisioned myself working for anyone. Like when I thought of what life after college would be like, I don't know what I envisioned to be, but I didn't see myself going to work every day. Like that was just not the part of it that I saw for myself. And so the next thing I did, I applied for a fellowship, a government funded fellowship, and I was able to go abroad to Sao Paulo, Brazil for a year.
Okay.
So I went there for a year. I was able to study Portuguese, which my Portuguese is terrible. It's been a minute since I was there.
How do you say, how are you doing?
Tudo bem.
Okay.
So you got that. I got the basics. I got the basics.
Okay.
Yeah. So I studied Portuguese for a year. That was an amazing experience. I've traveled a lot, but I hadn't lived anywhere abroad before.
Okay.
So especially not for that length of time.
Right. That's a long time.
Yeah. So it was a great experience. Got to go to classes, got to meet people. It opened my eyes to the different possibilities of things that were available. It's definitely opened my mind permanently to not living in the United States, I think. Because even now, I do often think about, well, moving. I could just move to this place. And when I think about moving, I'm not like constricted to the United States. I'm right. like, there's places abroad that I would be interested in, and maybe I could go over there.
Right.
Yeah, so I did that for a year. And then finally, once I was done with that program, I was a bit homesick. So I was like, okay, I'm ready to come back to the United States. And I had visited Atlanta right before I left, and I had a great time. I just had a really fun weekend. That's what the decision came from, move here. I had a really fun weekend. It was July 4th. I came for like the holiday weekend. I had a fun weekend, and I was like, it's fun here. I want to try. And I never lived in the South. I was like, it's warmer. It's a completely different culture that I'm not anywhere familiar with. I've done Northeast. I'm from the Midwest. That's just kind of, I know the North. And I don't know the South, but I like the South, right? And my family is from the South.
Okay.
So I was like, I'm going to try out Southern life. So I started like applying for roles while I was still in Brazil, like applying for full-time.
And what's the timeline right now?
Right now we're in 20. So I graduated from my grad program in 2016. Right now we're like 2017 when I'm finishing up Brazil.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So 2017, that's when I actually moved to Atlanta. So I was able to secure a role while I was still remote. So I got someone to hire me. They never met me in person. I'm like, you guys really took a risk, okay? Because I could be crazy. Like, we only Skyped and Zoomed, and our connection wasn't great.
Mm-hmm.
So we would be Skyping, and the call would keep dropping, but we still were going. So I went with an organization here, a local nonprofit, and I worked with them for about 2.5 years.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
And I built my business while I was still working with them. And eventually I realized, part of the reason why I built my business, because I realized I wanted to work with entrepreneurs.
Mm.
I was really interested in working with in entrepreneurship. And that role didn't necessarily have that opportunity per se, not in the way that I wanted it to. And so that's when I began to start my business. And originally I started off as an agency where I was doing like marketing work for people. And what I recognize over time is like a lot of people, especially when you're working with earlier entrepreneurs, a lot of them are not ready to hire someone, and a lot of them need more so advisement.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I started offering consultation as a business, part of my business. And then I realized that is really where I enjoyed focusing my energy, but also where I think my audience needed me to focus my energy more.
Right.
So eventually, so I started my business at the end of 2018, worked it while I was working at my job 2019, and then quit my job around late 2019.
Okay.
And so this is going on a little over a year of like
full-time
entrepreneurship.
Right.
Yeah. And so I was still doing, and I still am doing some marketing services, but I am by Q1 aiming to completely transition out of that. And my service offerings are all around coaching now.
Gotcha.
And so what I called what I was doing before was brand coaching, but mm-hmm. I've kind of coined the term like brand impact coaching I don't know what people consider mostly when they think of brand coaching, but typically what it entails is like supporting people, helping people develop like their brand identity,
right.
who they are as a business, and also like how they want to market themselves.
Right.
But for me, I specifically work with folks who will have I'll tell you my target, right? So I specifically work with people who are entrepreneurs, but they want to transition out of their full-time job. So they're side hustlers. And they want to get into the full-time world, but either they have a business, they don't know how to scale it to get enough income to be able to leave, or they know they want to use their current expertise that they use in their career for a business, but they're not really sure how to make that transition.
Right.
So that was over time, I began to focus and see, okay, this is where I need to, and that's also who I was. So I identified with that audience, but I also recognized, hey, these people are the people that are typically reaching out to me, and let me start to like just configure everything I do to focus in on that kind of person.
Right.
And so where the impact comes in is most of these people, part of the reason why they want to do their own business is because they want to leave a particular type of legacy, a particular type of impact. And they probably feel like, you know, in that job or in my career field, I'm not seeing, after you get to a certain point, you feel like, you know what, I'm not making anything really happen over here, right? I'm kind of contributing to this existing machine,
right?
But I can't say that, you know, what is my legacy? What is it I'm leaving? Or am I really helping and working in the issues that I feel passionate about?
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes jobs can confine you in that way where you're not able to do that. But entrepreneurship can open up so many worlds for you because you can utilize your expertise in different ways that maybe you're not able to when you're working for somebody. So that's kind of, I think that's everything.
That's solid. No, we appreciate you.
Yeah, that's kind of like the full circle story. So that's kind of how I got into doing brand impact coaching, and more recently, like just really focusing in on coaching.
The coaching aspect.
Folks, yeah, coaching aspect, but also specifically coaching that type of person, that person who is an aspiring entrepreneur or current, but they're like ready to do that thing full time.
Ready to really, transition. And
yeah,
like,
ready to transition. And just they need support. They need knowledge. A lot of what I do too, why I would say it's a mixture of coaching and consultation.
Mm-hmm.
But where the coaching aspect comes in is like, there's a lot of mindset shifting work mm-hmm. that has to happen for someone to mentally make that transition before they're able to oftentimes like physically make the transition because right. And that's something I talk about a lot on Clubhouse and in my content on my social media is like, hey, what gets you rewarded as an employee is not what gets you rewarded
mm-hmm.
as an entrepreneur. It's a different game, it's different rules. You have to learn what is rewarded here. And I know for me that was like a big challenge of learning. You're not, you know, getting out of the habit of being paid for your time and not charging people based on your time anymore.
Right. Yeah.
That's part of it. That's a hard thing to shake
when
you're so accustomed. Like that's how you're compensated when you're an employee.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's hard not to make those correlations. It's hard to charge based on your value. It's hard to ascertain your value. Right. So there's work that we do when I'm working with my clients, specifically in my Build Your Brand from Scratch bootcamp program, where I'm actually helping them to understand this is what your value is in the marketplace.
Right.
Like this is, cause some people like literally don't know. Like I spoke to someone on the phone earlier this week and they were telling me they did sales and they want to, they weren't sure where they wanted to focus. I was like, do you know how many people don't know how to sell and feel icky about selling and don't know how, for me, that was a big thing too. Like learning how to sell and investing. And right now I'm still investing in my education around sales and
that's
being
so
better.
Important.
Right, but
that's so important.
That's another thing, the mindset piece of understanding, hey, you got to sell stuff to people. You got to ask people to buy things from you. Like that is going to be the key to how you're successful.
Yeah.
And for some people that is like
getting on the phone and
not just getting on the phone, but taking a card. And so like for some people that is just like the worst thing ever. And so I had to let her know, hey, that is a very valuable thing. Like a lot of people would love to learn how to do that or want to feel like there's something out there where they can feel comfortable in learning how to do it and be able to disassociate those feelings of like ickiness and being a used car salesman type of person, you know, or an auctioneer. Like that's how people I think feel. Or they're making people feel uncomfortable because they're asking them for money. So yeah, she needed an outside perspective to be outside of the employee world
mm-hmm.
to tell her, hey, from my perspective of working with entrepreneurs, that's something that a lot of them struggle with.
Right.
You know, so a lot of times that is part of the work that we do is also like helping them do research.
Got you.
And where to look and what questions to ask so they can figure out, okay, how are my skills valuable or if they're not. But most of the time, if you have a job in it, it probably is valuable in some degree. But you may have to tweak how you service people, how you deliver it
mm-hmm.
for the audience that you're trying to get now as an entrepreneur.
Right, so true. Let's talk about like what's going to be, I guess, with Facebook, Instagram, like what's going to be the new like tips or different things we could look out for the future with those platforms, any of the platforms like in social media right now, like the next 5 years, what's something to expect and what should people be doing to help them, their businesses grow and also to be able to utilize the platforms the best they can?
So I think that's a great question. And my mind was going in several different places when you were talking. I think overall, and this is what I advise my clients to do, is separate from the social media platform, because the platform is always the vehicle to do something. It's really like, what is the goal you're trying to achieve?
Right.
And that's the most important thing. And what I recognize is that where we're going is people want connection. That's why you see right now apps like Clubhouse being so popular, because people want to feel connected. They want to have conversations. People are in general a lot more savvy to markets being marketed to. So it's not as effective, right? Even someone who's not in marketing kind of knows, okay, this is a marketing post,
right?
You know, people are even just naturally more discerning than they may have been 30 years ago or whatever. So you really have to come across really authentic, really genuine, and connect with people. You have to talk to people.
Yeah, it's not
right. Like, you have to talk to people. So if you want to be an entrepreneur, I don't care what it is, you're gonna have to talk to people, and a lot of people.
Right.
Like, to the point, I was even speaking to someone last week, and I was like, my vocal cords are a little bit sore because I've been talking to people. I have been talking to people on the phone, on Clubhouse, all these different places all week. So understanding that it's going to be a lot of communication. I think we think that we use these social media platforms sometimes to be a shield, so we think we don't have to do that.
Right.
So if I just post something online, people will just start buying stuff.
Right.
And then I don't have to really connect with anyone. I don't have to get to know anyone's name, but that is not how people buy. Like, people are not gonna buy from a brand new face that they've never seen before. So you have to, the trust, the credibility is super big. And I think what I see now too is just like celebrity culture. And even if you're into like astrology at all, those are some of the predictions. Like, we're seeing a lot of people who are kind of held up a certain way be brought down.
In what way do you mean?
I think that people in general are looking for real stuff.
I got you.
So this idea of being like an image of perfection and I'm here and you're my fans, and like, people are not feeling that. People are not like that.
So
over
true.
The next 5 years is going to go even worse. Like, you're going to have to be a real person. You're going to have to come to people real. People are going to be very discerning about the real and the fake, and people are going to appreciate just more natural, authentic, even if it's not all perfect, even if you're not coming on camera looking perfect. But if you're just saying something real and it's resonating with people, that is what's gonna get people to connect. So I think whatever platforms you're using, you have to bring that spirit into it. So using things like on Instagram, I've spent more time this year in my DMs and on my live than I have making posts.
Gotcha.
Unless I'm directing someone to something I'm doing live.
Right.
Because I recognize that I'm not engaging with people that much in the post, but in the DMs I can engage with them, on the lives I can engage with them, and I can build trust and credibility with them.
Right.
Using those platforms. I think that, so whatever the platform that you're using, really wanting to enable like the live feature, whatever connection, whatever aspects of the platform enable you to connect directly.
Right.
Is super important. Is going to be very important. I think it's also estimated that so many jobs and things like that are going to be virtual. So really the virtual communication is going to continue, where we'll be using things like Zoom or, you know, FaceTime or whatever other things we use to like video chat with people. I think that is here to stay.
Gotcha.
For sure. And yeah, I think the biggest thing is like what I said earlier around just general communication, direct communication. So I think we'll see more features on sites that enable that kind of interaction.
Exactly.
And we'll see. And it wouldn't even surprise me if like even dating websites now are going to start having some sort of something where you're like connected. Like, I think that is where it's going to go.
It's just like having access not that celebrity status where they have to,
like, you don't know that person, you can't touch that person.
Got to go through 5-6 people just to get to the person. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, I was like, look at, I guess, Gary Vee stuff. The text messaging community app, like, text is like a big group of people you can have within this one number. You can text your fans.
And I have a text community.
You got a text community, so like so text messaging as well as like that direct access to my person that I love to learn from.
Right, and even having people be able to come on video with you, and ask you questions directly, stuff like that, is going to be very important to people. So I think some of the old school selling methods are kind of like where we're going to be going back to in a lot of ways. And so people really have to rethink this idea that, well, I need to be posting 3 times a day, or I need to be because people will come to me, should I post 3 times a day? I'm like, let me like reorient your mind. Like, no, like that's not even how to think about it. Mm-hmm. It's not just if I do this, if I post something every 3 days, success will come, you know, like that is just not how it's going to work. Right. You have to connect with people. So that's the most important thing. It's not even about the post so much, because even if you didn't post that much, but you were constantly using that platform to connect, you would see results.
That's so true. And like, the direct communication with people, that's definitely a strong point for 2021. And I also feel that like, if you're posting something and hashtagging, people want to like try to, they want to try to like get business without having to like, talk or have to interact. Yes. And like, and then also within the post, they'll do a generic post that has nothing to do. Like, somebody like has a meal prep company and they're posting something about health. Cool. But they're not in the post talking about it.
Right.
And it's not, you can't connect with the brand as much. Mm-hmm. It's just a generic post without a logo. Yeah. So,
and I think there has to be an understanding that there's a difference between marketing and sales.
Right.
Because you can post something on social media and maybe people will like it because it's a cool thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe you posted something cool and people liked it, but that doesn't mean people are going to buy.
Right.
But if your intention is just to post stuff to be cool, then that's fine. But if your intention is to monetize, then that is where connection is involved.
Right.
Like, connection is required. If you just want to get a bunch of likes, you can make your own content or repost fun content and just get a bunch of likes, you know? But if you want to see a dollar return, a difference in your bank account, then you're going to have to talk to that person.
Gotcha. Okay. So, so I guess, and one more thing to add in there, in regards to like the 2021 platform and like, I mean, like with social media and the whole landscape, there's something I learned the other day too, is that, I don't know if you saw on Facebook that Apple, they made a transition from like protecting people's privacy, within like ads, like through the phone, through iPhone. So like pretty much they can't run, you're not gonna be able to like run ads pretty much on iPhone. You won't be able to see any ads anymore, or is like this is gonna come to a point where like you'll stop seeing ads, and then the ad platform is gonna slow down a bit, especially like in the UK. I believe they stopped that.
The ad thing is gonna come to
A halt.
Yeah.
You know, and it's gonna come back to, because people actually want to be in person. Like people hate being in a house. Mm-hmm. People are gonna want to at some point want to be in person again, interact. So organically, like I was just talking to one of my friends the other day about it, organically, like people are, you gotta have to reach, like you said, reach people organically, reach people through events, or like be super creative, but it's gonna have to be one-on-one, like you said. But it's the same thing that we all been saying, like, you be yourself and show yourself, connect with folks. Mm-hmm. It's just that, it's the old school method.
Yeah, it's the old school. Like, technology. And I think the ads are becoming so oversaturated.
So true.
With so many people doing ads now, it could be very difficult to get traction on an ad.
Right.
You know, you have to really, it's such a complex thing now to run ads. So, and that's why even when I'm thinking about ads, I'm like, okay, well, what are the ads that give me, like LinkedIn has messaging ads. Mm-hmm. And so that could have a higher, and I would imagine for most people who use it, it has a higher conversion rate than just the way your regular ad that someone sees while they're absentmindedly scrolling.
Exactly.
Because if you send me a direct message, I'm giving you some of my attention. Mm-hmm. You're in my inbox at that point. You're in my face. And there's, and you can put merge tags on there. So it's the person saying, hey, so-and-so. So there's customization available with that.
Right.
So even I think, I don't know that ads are definitely not going to go, but I think the redirection of the ads, and like Facebook will need to specifically like offer some different ad options, because just kind of seeing an ad as I'm scrolling is just not going to get the same type of traction as like what some of the other platforms offer.
Right.
So I can imagine them probably moving into some sort of messaging ads, but then that's also gonna probably piss some people off. So it's gonna be an interesting.
It's definitely.
They're gonna need to get creative with their ad stuff, yeah. But it's gonna be interesting.
Yeah, I know there's people thinking of ideas right now. They're like creating something as we speak.
They probably do have some messaging going, but then it's like, who wants all them DMs in there?
Yeah, it'll be heavy. I mean, they're already kind of doing it. You can already kind of do that with Facebook.
Yeah.
Is it used as much? Probably not, but I think people might be leaning towards, more of the messaging ads, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's more authentic. I'm just thinking. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that. But they have a 5-year outlook right now. I know they're like doing something. They're going to have to switch up the game.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. So,
yeah.
So what would you say, how can someone get, I don't know, like kind of reach to where you're at or get into the same space as you and kind of build up their platform, I mean, like their brand or business? Like how do they learn from you or... get to, yeah, because you've had a long journey, so like, how do they get? Yeah,
I think the first step, because what I find in coaching is anytime someone reaches out to me, whatever they say their problem is never really their problem. Because they often think, oh, my problem is I don't know what to post on social media, or my problem is I don't know how many posts I should be doing a week. That's often where people think it is. What I find is most of the time, the issue is deeper. And the issue is usually around their business concept is not strong. It's not clear. They're not clear. There's a lack of internal clarity about what it is they're trying to achieve and who they're trying to help achieve it.
Right.
So that oftentimes the issue each time, like these are, I look at like those types of things as surface level issues. Mm-hmm. And then the deeper issue is something around some sort of lack of clarity. As far as who you're serving. So I think a lot of times and this is something I say in my trainings, mm-hmm. to joke with people, but I'm like, every time you want to start a business, the first thing you want to do is put together a website, get our social media name, get our logo. We have thought out the idea of what it is we're actually trying to do, and we're already marketing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we find ourselves in that stuck position. No one's really buying. No one's really paying attention. I don't know what to post. And so it's because that groundwork is really not laid. You have to do a combination of like internal work to figure out what you want to do, coupled with like external research, mm-hmm. to understand like the market you're trying to go into, understand what else is being offered, understand who else is being served, and utilize that in your own personal preferences, mm-hmm. of what makes you feel good and what makes you feel happy, because we're not trying to build businesses that we hate, you know, mm-hmm. like we do if we already didn't like certain things about our job. We're not trying to build businesses working with those same types of people if that's not what we'd like to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized a lot of the groundwork is not done. So I encourage people to take your time in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
when you're really figuring out what it is you want to do. Understand your concept really well. Like understand the basic concept. Because sometimes I will ask, somebody will be talking about branding and I need to start promoting, I need to start printing some flyers. And like I ask them, who are the clients that you're trying to target? Who are the customers that you're trying to target? Who are these people? Where do they live? What do they care about? What do they like? Why would they buy your product? Like, mm-hmm. what is this person's psyche like? And they're like,
oh, yeah.
And then I'm like, what are you going to offer them? Especially with service-based businesses.
Right.
I'm like, okay, what's your services? Well, I could do this, I could do that, I could do this, I could do that, I could do this, I could do that. I was like, see, that's not going to be clear marketing messaging. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to be very clear. This is what I offer. This is who I offer it for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is going to help you
any sort of marketing effort moving forward, because your marketing can be very clear. If you're doing ads, you know who clearly you need to target, what segment you need to pick to target for your ads. So it's like all of that, when that stuff is not right and clear, it just messes up everything after that. So I think my advice to people, and my advice to myself, would have been to get really clear. I needed some experience a little bit to niche down, but I feel like where I am now, I have the most clarity I've ever had in my business about who I'm serving, what problems I'm specifically solving for them. I understand my market a lot better. I understand the audience that I'm serving is an underserved audience, and from my research, whereas other people who may do something similar to what I do, but very few focus on my target the way that I do and offer them what I offer them. Right. So I know that this is distinctive. I know that this is something special. So yeah, a lot of that work needs to be done. And that's what, especially what I take people through, is my Build Your Brand from Scratch framework that actually has 5 elements where we go through all of those things. So we go through your mission, your vision, your purpose. We go through your aesthetic, which that would be more so last though, right? We go through your target audience. We go through like your value add and what's special about you. And once you get finished with all those things, then that is going to inform how you market, where it makes sense for you to show up, how you're going to have conversations with your clients, price points, just everything, you know? So I find that that's often where the ball is dropped in the beginning.
That's so true. That's so true. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, even when I started my company, I've always I actually started off with a business plan that got me going, but even still, like, the customer persona, that came down the road, to tell the truth. Like,
sometimes you have a target audience and you can't niche until later because you need some experience. That's what I tell my clients. I'm like, you can kind of know where you want to focus, but you're going to get more clear as you start to do it. And I think for me, for coaching, that really helped me. Working with a lot of different kind of businesses, it helped me see, okay, this type of person, this type of business doesn't really work for what I do. And it also helped me see, because I'm almost like, I vet my clients a lot more now. Like, I'm interviewing them while they're interviewing me, kind of thing. And something I'm moving forward into is like having applications before. Like, you have to fill out an application, then I'm reviewing the application, then I talk to you, then I say, okay, yes, I think you're a good fit for this program. But I think that increases the trust with that person too, because it's like, I'm really trying to make sure that this is going to work for you. And if I have enough experience now to see who this works for and who it doesn't, and if I know you don't fit into one of the categories, I'm gonna just straight up tell you, hey, this is not for you, but hey, this is where you can go in the meantime, and let's maybe check back in a couple months and see where you are and see if, you know, this is a good fit for you now. So I don't even just take everyone who comes in just for my own professional integrity.
And what do you call that in the profession? Well, in the marketing world, like, if you may take some applicants, you may not take some. What's that called in the marketing world?
Was where I would say it's called vetting, but what?
Just vetting. Okay, disqualifying.
Yeah. You're vetting them. Like, okay, is this person gonna work? And then you recognize, you know, after the headaches and working with the different kind of people, it's like, you know what? I'm not gonna even work with this type of person. And then your prices may reflect too, because you recognize, I want to work with serious people. Serious people often will pay more. And if they pay more, they're going to be more serious.
Exactly.
So that's also something that you have to think about as well.
So true.
Yeah.
Wow. No, this is good information. She's dropping gems right now, y'all. Like, right now, like, really hone in on what she's saying. And make sure, like, at the end, she's going to, you know, drop her website and Instagram and stuff as well too, so you can be able to reach out to her as well. But definitely, like, listening on some of these questions, I mean, these answers that she's putting out, because you can really help the business, or you can help just like maybe your company, whatever you're doing. So just make sure you're tuning in for sure if you're watching or listening. So the last thing I have for you, question that I have for you, is what's something you could leave for the crowd that's listening and watching? That's a quote that they could take with themselves for the rest of their life on the spot.
Well, let's see here. Ask for more.
And why that?
That's what popped up. I have a mug that I give like some of my clients, and I sell it on my website too. And that's what it says, ask for more. Because I think so often, even with myself, but even with my clients, I see this hard for us to ask for more.
Right.
And we have to ask, like, we deserve more. And sometimes we don't even know that we're selling ourselves short. Mm. So I'm gonna say ask for more.
Always ask for more.
Yeah, always ask for more.
Appreciate it. Well, that's good stuff. Do you wanna drop some of your, like,
sure,
your social
stuff? Yeah. So should I look at the camera? Should I
look at you? Yeah. Look at me because of
okay.
Yeah,
it's gonna be weird.
Mic's out here.
Oh, okay. So you can find me at angelmillsbrandstrategy.com. I am also on social media as she is Angel Mills on everything. And yes, that's where you can find me and check me out. And definitely if folks see anything that interests them and they're interested in making that transition from entrepreneurship to being from being an employee to firing their boss and being their own boss, then definitely check out my website, see the program that I have available. And if you think it's something you want, go ahead and apply and we can have a conversation.
Awesome. Make sure, yeah, www.angelmillsbrandstrategy.com. And I really appreciate you being on the show today. It's great. You know what? You're the first marketer, I'm trying to think. First marketer of the season that I've spoken
okay,
to. So it's good to just like talk some nerdy stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
this is happening. Yeah.
So it's good. Yeah. Anything else you want to say before we sign off?
No, I think that's it. But I just want to thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. And yeah, good luck to everyone in 2021. It's gonna be a good year.
It's gonna be a great year. Yeah. So, oh yeah, make sure you if you follow her on, she's also on Clubhouse too. So
yes,
download that app. And yeah, make sure you go on Clubhouse. She has some great rooms that she talks in. So awesome.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Life Journey Podcast with Quentin Gause. To find out more and to follow the journey, visit Quentin's Instagram at QGause or our business page at iron_visuals. For full recaps of the show, find us on iTunes and the Google Play Store. Thank you for tuning in.